Yeah, welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, government allays fears of customers of the banks over new VAT charges on transactions. So what services specifically would attract the new VAT charges by the banks? Plane spotted in Iran carrying Ghanaian passengers within a private business to that country, says government. But was there no government official on board? Information ministry carries all the finger pointings. And the police and their determination to crush crime. Is it a task too difficult to handle? Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these on our program tonight. You can also join the discussions by text 0266-677570. 0266-677570. But first, Rosemary Gaze is here with a summary of the day's news.
The Ministry of Finance has refuted media publication on banks charging VAT on services which include salaries and savings. A statement issued and signed by Deputy Finance Minister Atto Forson says salaries, savings, deposits, loans and payments with checks are all exempted from VAT. President John Dramani Mahama has encouraged Ghanaians to do away with the politics of vilification and work in unity. President Mahama made the call when the family of Alhaji Roland Isiful Al-Hassan, an astute politician, lawyer and diplomat and prominent member of the NPP, called on him at Flagstaff House to officially announce his death. The newly elected chairman of the NPP, Paul Afoku, has in his maiden news conference assured the party of his neutrality in overseeing the party's flag bearership election. He also entreated supporters and spokespersons for the various flag bearer aspirants to concentrate on fostering unity in the party. And the Ministry of Health has introduced 5 new vaccines to the already known 6 vaccines that protect children against killer diseases. The director of the expanded program on immunization, Dr. George Bonsu, made this known at a news briefing in Accra to mark the African Vaccination Week and the 10th anniversary of child health promotion.
It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Unique FM 95.7 in Accra. Our Ghanaians, and for that matter, those who transact businesses with the banks, bracing themselves up for new VAT charges on transactions they undertake. Well, this seemed to be the case, as the Ministry of Finance has announced 17% charges for some bank transactions under the new VAT law, which is to take effect from the 1st of May this year. So what is the motive behind this new law? Is it something that will further burden Ghanaians? Let's go to the phone lines now. James Aveji is the chairman of the Finance Committee in Parliament and he's joining us. Good evening, sir, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening, Agatha. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. Mr. Aveji, what does the new VAT law say with regard to the charging of 17% on bank transactions?
Well, thank you very much. First of all, the new VAT, which is Act 870, was passed in 2013. Now, it was gazetted on 31st December 2013. And this VAT law is to revise and consolidate the law relating to the imposition of value-added tax and to provide for related matters. Now, one of the key changes in the new VAT is the inclusion of financial services rendered for a fee, commission, or a similar charge. Now, the financial services has been defined in the law to mean provision of insurance, issue, transfer, receipt of or dealing with money, whether in domestic or foreign currency, or any note or other payment of money, provision of credit or operation of a bank account in similar institution. Now, the issue that is being discussed now is that whether some services provided by banks are part of the services that are taxable or are subject to. But if you read the Act, under Item 19 of the First Chapter, there are some supplies which are exempted. And these exempted include, one, of financial services that excluding financial services rendered by for a fee, commission, or similar charge. Insurance, life insurance, whether rendered for a fee or commission or similar charge. Now, if you go on to in the law, you will see that salaries that are paid to the bank, savings that are made to the bank, deposits that are made to the bank, loans and payments by issue of checks are all exempted from payment of VAT. Now, the new VAT Act only affects fees that are charged on non-core financial services. Now, we realize that the core financial services of banks are receiving of deposits, giving out loans to customers, and charging interest on them. These are the core financial services. We also talk about salaries, where most workers receive their salaries through the bank, and therefore this has also become one of the core services of the bank. Now, savings that are made by ordinary people who are currently mostly having savings account instead of current account are all the core services that are provided by the bank. All these are exempted from payment of VAT. Those that are abstract VAT are non-core financial services, such as legal services that are provided by some banks, accounting services are provided by banks, actuarial services provided by banks, notary services and consulting services. You realize that these are not a core business of banking, but some or most of the banks provide these services for a fee. And for that matter, if I'm a consultant, I provide consulting services and I charge VAT, and a bank also provides the same consultancy services but do not charge VAT, then there's a problem there. So it is these non-core financial services of banks that are subject to VAT, but not the core services, which includes salary, savings, deposit, loan, and payment by means of scheme. They are exempted from payment of VAT.
With the explanation given, why is the confusion with the text messages customers receive today from banks that from the 1st of May they are going to charge 17% on all transactions?
I think that I don't have a copy of that text message, but I think that the banks are creating confusion with the banking sector. You see, most banks have already paid VAT on their input that they use in providing services to customers. So if I'm a bank, I pay input tax in the form of VAT, and at the end, I charge my client by providing these non-core financial services to them, and I charge VAT. The difference that I would say as a bank is the difference between my output VAT and my input VAT. So if a bank is transferring all the 17.5% to a client or a customer, that is not right. That is not right. So banks should not say that, oh, now we are going to tax VAT because we are made to tax VAT. And for that matter, you, whenever you or a service will provide to you, we are going to tax 70%. That might not be right. So I think that the banks are creating confusion. They should let the customers know which services that are subject to VAT and which are not subject to VAT. I think that will clear the space.
Is it the case also that there has not been enough publicity on this and that the banks did not get the information well?
Agatha, you realize that the law was passed in 2013. It was gazetted on 31st December 2013 and was supposed to take effect from 2nd January 2014. But because banks want to have time to prepare adequately in order to charge these services, well, the agreement was to have this format from January to April. Enough for the banks to prepare and educate their clients or customers in order to start. So I do not think that the banks do not have enough time. 4 months is adequate enough for them to have, but still, if they think that there's an issue that still needs to be clarified with the Ministry of Finance, I think that they can do that before they start sending these text messages, I think that the text messages are unfortunate and they are creating panic among the clients.
So is it only the banks which will be affected, or there are other financial institutions?
There are other financial services. Financial services, you are providing a legal services. It's a financial service that you are providing. If you are providing actuarial services, it's a financial services you are providing. If you are providing accounting services, it's a financial services you are providing. So if you are providing all these services, they are subject to VAT. And therefore, it is not only banks that are going to be made to pay this, and other bodies that are providing services, these services will not pay. No. Once you are providing these services, whether you are a bank or you are an individual, or even you are a private individual company or whatever, you will be made to charge these services. So it is not only the bank, but anyone providing these services are going to be subject to pay the VAT.
Well, for purposes of clarification again, salaries, savings, loans, deposits will not be affected with this new VAT law.
Yes, they will not be affected by new VAT. They are actually exempted from the VAT.
So in the event that you go to the bank or any financial institution to make a withdrawal or a deposit and you find out that you are being charged, what do you do?
Yeah, you have to let the management of the bank know why you are charged this. Right, the VAT law says that they are exempted. For instance, you receive your salary to the bank, and then the bank charges you VAT for that, 17.5% deducted from your salary. That is ridiculous. So you have to let the bank know and complain to the bank, and if the bank do not respond, then probably you will have another way of probably relating to Ghana Revenue Authority to let them know, so that the bank can be called to order to implement the law as it is, but not to use this medium to extort or whatever from the customer.
And Mr. Avedi, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
You're welcome.
Avedi is the chairman of the Finance Committee in Parliament. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Still on the new VAT law, customers of banks today expressed dismay about proposal of 17.5% VAT charges on transactions with the banks. Which kind of transactions are to attract the VAT charge? We get some public education from the Ghana Revenue Authority. Ni Ayi Aite is the Deputy Commissioner in charge of policy and programs at the GRE and join us on the line. Good evening, Saite, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, players, man. I hope everything is fine with you.
Very well, sir. Now, what is the position of the VAT law on paying 17.5% on transactions with the banks?
Anyway, good question there. The value-added tax law that has been passed, that Act 870, imposes VAT on what is called financial service, which of course includes literally what the banks engage in. But under the VAT law, there is VAT on financial services, but there's an exemption. And the exemption reads that what is exempt is financial services, other financial services that are rendered for a fee, commission, or a similar charge. That is the position, not just the bank, but indeed all forms of financial services as defined within the law.
So it's not a new thing.
In terms of the Act 870 was passed at the end of last year, the 3rd December. But VAT is not a new thing. VAT has been there since 1998. VAT has been there on some aspects of financial services since 1998. But when we are talking about the Act 870, that is the most recent amendment to the VAT Act, that's why now it extends VAT to some financial services, particularly those ones that are rendered for a fee or a commission. That's right.
But are the banks VAT registered at all and qualified to collect VAT?
Pardon me, the bank, hello?
Are the banks VAT registered at all and qualified to collect VAT?
Let's put it this way. Any business, including the bank, that is dealing in what we call taxable suppliers, dealing with services that VAT is charged on, is liable to register for the VAT if its turnover exceeds the threshold that is set within the law. So in that general principle, a bank providing taxable financial service right now is obliged to register for the VAT and charge the tax in accordance with the provisions of the law and to apply to any other person who is dealing with taxable financial services, not only the bank, I want to say. Like the non-bank institutions, any business enterprise that is rendering the type of service that has been defined as financial services and whose turnover is above the threshold that is indicated in the law is obliged to register for charge the tax. That's right.
Mm. And again, which financial institutions also fall under the new law and what services are they to charge the 17.5% VAT on?
Like I've explained, I just mentioned earlier on, the VAT is imposed on services that are provided. It so happens that banks provide basically those type of financial services, but they are what we call the non-bank financial institutions. They are business enterprises or companies that operate in the securities industry, etc. So all those type of businesses that are engaged in financial services will have to register. But the banks are the most common ones that you can give an example of because they are fundamentally engaged in providing financial services.
Now, talking about this paying tax on non-core financial services, how is this going to be done? Are the banks going to pay the charges or pass it on to the customer?
Well, let's be specific. When we talk of financial service in the Act, by the Act 870, that the VAT Act current ones, it defines the financial services as the provision of insurance, the issue, the transfer, the receipt of or dealing with money, whether in domestic or foreign currency, or any other notes of payment of money. It deals with provision of credit or operation of a bank account or an account of a similar institution. This type of service is what the law calls a financial service. But the law exempts financial service by stating that financial services are exempt other than financial services rendered for a fee, commission, or a similar charge. So just using the bank as an example, the bank traditionally provides financial services in addition to possibly some other services. So if the bank has a turnover that exceeds the threshold, it will register for VAT. If they provide you a service, and I can give an example like going for a bank draft, for instance, a banker's draft. A bank draft is a service that the bank provides, and most of the time, there is a charge for it, possibly about 5 cedis or 3 cedis. Now, that then becomes a financial service that is rendered for a fee. The bank is obliged now to charge VAT on that one, and it will be the VAT will be on the fee that is charged, that is 75% of the 5 cedis or so that is charged for providing that service. This is an example of a financial service that is provided for a fee, and therefore it will attract a tax. If your bank gives an ATM service free of charge, there's no tax on it, then that service is exempt from VAT because there is no fee, commission, or a charge on it. I hope that explains the thing in general. But it applies also to any other institution or business that is providing the type of service which is defined as financial service in the law. So, I don't know whether this simple explanation will suffice.
Well, so with this new VAT law, is it going to have any implication in the banking sector?
Certainly. I mean, the VAT, like I said, is imposed on goods and services. Hitherto, the VAT was on financial services, but only on what was then professional advice, and the rest. But the first from January this year, so this is the amendment to the what we call the VAT law 870, VAT has been extended to the financial service sector. And to the extent that financial services provided by registered persons, and there's a charge to it, like I've explained, that charge, the VAT, that service will be taxable and the tax will be on the charge. And using the bank draft example I've given you, if it is 5 cedis will be charged, 75% of 5 cedis, off the top of my head, I guess will come to about 8 pesos or so. So possibly there will be 8 pesos taxed on the service that is being provided. However, let's bear in mind that before this law, this amendment, the banks were already paying VAT on their input to provide their service, and they weren't getting any credit for those ones. Now, when the bank becomes registered, the bank now qualifies to take input, what we call the input tax credit, to deduct the tax that they themselves were paid on the inputs that are used in providing the service. It may be that the bank will then fall. I'm not saying that is what will happen. That if you look at provision of bank draft, instead of charging 5%, given the fact that we are not, instead of charging only 5 cedis, given the fact that we are not taking input tax credit, we may increase that charge to say 5 cedis, 20 pesos, or 5 cedis, 50 pesos, or perhaps we maintain the 5 cedis and make it inclusive of the tax. It all depends on how the bank draft is costing. But the fundamental issue is that, using the example I've given, if the provision of a bank draft, which you may go to take, for whatever value attract a charge of 5 cedis, that becomes a taxable financial service, and the tax will be on that charge imposed, and it will be 7.5% off the charge. It will be paid by the customer, and if the customer is also a business person, and that financial service is in furtherance of his business, it would or he could also qualify as input tax credit for that person. So certainly the VAT has implications for the financial service sector, which was different from what had been previously.
So in a situation where financial institutions attempt to slap their 17.5% VAT on all transactions, what can a non-suspecting customer do?
To the extent that, first, I don't believe that any financial institution will be sought to do that. But to the extent that there is no charge on the service, like I've given examples, I'm aware that at least the bank that you doesn't charge anything for using the ATM. So there won't be any VAT for the services that are rendered when I use the ATM. So to the extent that there's no charge on the particular service that the bank is rendering, I don't believe any bank would impose a tax on it. They would impose a tax on those ones on which they are charging fees, commissions, or similar charges. And that's what I said the compliant bank should do.
Mr. Aite, we want to thank you for your time with us.
You're welcome. Right. Always welcome.
Ni Aite is the Deputy Commissioner in charge of policy and programs at the Ghana Revenue Authority. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. This is Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Government debunked speculation that a private jet which was spotted in Iran last week was full of government officials. The jet, which belongs to Ibrahim Mahama, brother of President Mahama, was initially reported to have been leased by the U.S. government to the Ghanaian government for business transactions with the Iranian government. But it later turned out that the plane actually belonged to Mr. Ibrahim Mahama, who was on a private business to the country. Citing the jet in Iran was always going to stir controversy because it is U.S. registered, and all know the kind of relationship that exists between the U.S. and Iran. Here, joining us on the line to give us some clarity on the controversy is Deputy Minister of Information, Murtala Mohammed. Good evening, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, and good evening to the service listeners.
Well, if you could raise your voice a bit. If government has nothing to do with the plane that landed in Iran, why are people saying some government officials were spotted on the jet? For instance, the president, a presidential staffer has been mentioned. What do you know about this?
Well, let me almost say that the response I'm going to give to this question, I believe, will bring to rest this halabaloo as to whether His Excellency the President leaves the jet, or the jet indeed was carrying the senior government officials. I believe that once this response are given, those who talk about it will be doing nothing but mischief. In the first place, the plane was registered in the United States of America. The plane is owned by engineers and planners, which coincidentally, the chief executive happened to be Mr. Ibrahim, who is also the brother to the president. This plane was registered in the United States of America. And once you register a plane in America or in any state, you would have the flag of that state that is tattooed. The plane was found in Iran, and the media in the United States of America, particularly the New York Times, actually indeed ran stories. They did not understand why the United States of America, which has imposed sanctions on Iran, would have its plane in Iran. I really do not think that the sanctions imposed on Iran by the United States of America indeed exclude, or if you like, insulate private individuals who want to go to the United States of America. And in this case, that flight belongs to a Ghanaian company, which is registered in the United States of America, and which happened to have gone to Iran on a business trip. That is the first statement. The second position on the matter has to do with the purported reportage, you know, that is stating that the Iranian authority have indicated that the plane was carrying top Ghanaian officials. I wish to state in an absolute and equivocal position that that plane indeed was not carrying any delegation representing any government or the president. The plane was carrying people who went there to transact their private businesses. What indeed happened was that a minister of state was also in the plane, and that minister of state sought permission from the chief of staff that he was going to embark on a private journey to Iran. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with any minister of state who wants to travel on a private, to deal on a private matter, as long as such a minister seeks, you know, consent or approval.
So who is this minister of state that we are talking about?
It was Dr. Mustafa Ahmed who indeed embarked on that private journey, and there is nothing wrong with that. Now, for someone to claim that the plane, initially they said it was leased by the president, someone further to say the president possibly was found in Iran, the president was served in Iran, the president hasn't traveled to Iran sometime now, the president has not been to Iran, the plane was never carrying any government delegation, the plane was carrying a delegation that went there to do purely their private business, and in any case, the plane belongs to a company whose CEO happens to be the brother to His Excellency the President. But the difficulty here has to do with the posture of some section of the media. I'm saying this because this is not the first time that engineers and planners and Ibrahim is being attacked by section of the media for nothing except vilification. We live in a country where the same media is saying that we need to support private businesses. Wait a minute. Private businesses ought to be protected, but private businesses that are led by individuals who have relations with the president ought to be attacked. And I think that that is the impression that is being created. You remember when the issue of the Merchant Bank came, you had a whole minority holding press conferences in parliament, supported by surrogates in the media, and they said that Ibrahim was indebted to Merchant Bank to the tune of almost 30%. Of the total indebtedness of Merchant Bank. Ibrahim has since paid the money. The media was in a complete state of incommunicado. They refused to tell the people of this country that Ibrahim has paid the money, and they are unconcerned about the other 70% of the indebtedness of Merchant Bank. So it tells you one thing, that their concern about the indebtedness of Merchant Bank was not about the taxpayers' interest. It was about the fact that a brother, a person who happens to be a brother to the president, was indebted to it. But it is significant also for us to understand that even that loan at Merchant Bank was given to Ibrahim in 2007, when the brother was not even a vice president, let alone a president. And I think that these things do not occur well for private businesses. Assuming that jet belonged to a different person rather than Ibrahim, I believe that the president would have been in it and the media wouldn't have bought it as to whether a plane that belong to a Ghanaian company is found in Iran or not. And I think that it does as well.
Mohammed, has the president ever traveled on that plane?
The president never traveled on that plane. The president has never traveled on that plane. The president hasn't traveled on that plane. The president didn't go to Iran. Nothing like that. So I'm wondering why anybody, by any stretch of imagination, would want to do the kind of things they have done. But you know one interesting thing? As the truth begins to emerge, as the facts are laid bare, you realize that that orchestration is falling like a pack of cards. And I don't think that it gets well for all democracy, and particularly the business community.
Do you think on hindsight, information like this should in future be quickly put in the public domain to prevent any furore?
Well, how can you prevent such a furore when people have made up their mind to unnecessarily and needlessly put up stories which they know in the hearts of their hearts that those stories are not true? I think that we also have a responsibility. I think that the media has a huge responsibility, particularly when it comes to such reportage. It is appropriate, and I am not a journalist. The ethics of the profession says you should check and cross-check. I strongly believe that those individuals could have easily done the necessary check by calling anybody in government. They never did that. Now, my sister, how can you prevent someone who has an agenda to do the kind of things they have done repeatedly and unabatedly? That is why I made references to some of the things. The gentleman is being attacked needlessly. This is a private businessman who is doing very well. And he's been doing well before his brother became even a vice president and became a president. And one cannot understand. So if your brother is a president, you cannot engage in any business which you are doing already. Nobody has been able to indicate that, yes, there is some collusion. The brother is using his office, or the gentleman is using his position as a brother to the president and doing some of this. You remember some few months ago or weeks ago, there was a publication that the brothers of the president are working at the Flagstaff House. When there isn't any member of the president, any member, whether distant family or close family, working at the Flagstaff House, and these stories were peddled out there. I think that we would do ourselves a lot of good. And like you said, the sword of the media must be seen to cutting at both sides. When the sword of the media is cutting at one side, it leaves several questions, and questions that border on the integrity and sanctity of the profession.
All right. Mr. Mohamed, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Murtala Mohamed is a Deputy Minister of Information and Media Relations. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Radio BAR 93.5 in Sunai and Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wa. The security of every individual is paramount. We'll go every length to ensure we are safe. However, our safety would not guarantee an end to crime. Criminal activities always abound. Just flip through the newspapers, inch your ear closer to the radio, and you are sure to hear a story on one crime or the other in different shape or form. With recent concerns about rising crime, the police seem to be put on the edge, and personnel are doing their bit to deal with it squarely. We are privileged to have in the studio tonight with us DSP Freeman Tete of the Police Public Affairs Directorate. Good evening and welcome to Radio Ghana Studios, DSP.
Good evening, my sister. Good evening to your cherished listeners. I'm actually privileged to be meeting you for the first time.
It's my pleasure to have warmly welcome. Now, moving on, you are virtually on every media platform, trying hard to defend your institution and make the police look good in the eyes of the public.
I actually disagree with that, because we are not saying the police should look good. We are disseminating information to the public. It's all about information. It's all about informing the public on issues of security, informing the public about the work that we are doing as an institution. We cannot work in the dark without letting coming to light. It will become zero. Particularly when our work hinges on public operation. That is why we are there as public relations officers to constantly feed the public with development in the service and also trending crime and effort, collaborative effort between the police and the public to fight crime generally.
So how is it? Is it a difficult job? Because sometimes it seems you defend the indefensible.
Well, it's actually a very difficult job. Your work starts from 5:30 a.m. and it ends somewhere around after 10 o'clock, especially when you have to go to some TV station that do their last news item from 10 to 11. So it's actually a difficult job, but that is a calling that we have no excuse to give at all. Beside that, the public must have information. Beside that, we need feedback from the public. That is why constantly we interact with the public through the media.
Interacting with the public. Do you think with all the work that you guys are the public affairs directorate are doing, the public now sees the police as friends and partners in crime fighting?
A different face now when it comes to policing. Constantly in touch with the public. It's proactive policing through the efforts of the community policing unit and the public affairs directorate or the department or the police service. So I think there is now that mistrust, that mist surrounding the police has been broken. We are talking about community policing, community involvement in policing. So we have to open up more to the public than we used to do in the past. Modern trend in policing, democratic policing, police accountability. That is what we are talking about.
So is that a feedback you get from the public that you are now more of friends and partners in?
Surely, we are getting a good feedback. That is why communities could volunteer and put our police station and also brainstorm us how best to collaborate with the police to provide security. On daily basis, people are knocking the doors of the regional police command, the national police headquarters, to see how best to collaborate with the police in terms of fighting crime. Direct feedback is gotten from the public on either police misconduct or praising the police, either faulting the police or praising the police.
So with all these information that you've been getting, is it that crime is on the ascendancy or your personnel have managed to bring it down?
Well, we are talking about statistics. We constantly record particular violence a few years ago. Some years back, about 10 years ago, it kept on going up. But I think with proactiveness, with strategies being put in place, this time around, we continue to record a reduction in crime. Notwithstanding this, I think we still have more work to be done or to do because crime is taking a new shape, a new trend. Different tricks are being adopted to outweigh the unsuspecting public. So it's becoming more complicated than the past, even though the numbers keep on reducing. But the criminals are adopting more complicated approach to their act than it was in the past. So we must equally adopt scientific method of combating this crime. A few years ago, we hardly hear of cyber crime. But today, there's pornography on the net, child prostitution on the net, human trafficking on the net, even robbery going on the net. People are learning new things on the net. So we must also abreast ourselves with those, the technology, the new trend. So becoming more sophisticated. So we need a police personnel who is very intelligent, who is on top of his job. So that is exactly what the police administration is now doing. Instead of the old-fashioned regimental training, it's becoming more or less an open-minded training, training the mind and the brawl. So that is what the mind and the brawl goes alongside.
It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra, and with me in the studio tonight is DSP Freeman Tete of the Police Public Affairs Directorate. Then we are talking about security in general. Not surprisingly, reports on domestic crimes is on the higher. What is accounting for this? Mention can be made of assault, battery, arson, and all that.
Well, I'll find it difficult to answer, but there was, thankfully, I have a little background in issues of fighting domestic violence because I've had a long association with the Domestic Violence and Victim Support Unit. So sometimes financial, sometimes the person, the perpetrator has been a victim before, sometimes with alcohol, drugs, or inexperience as a husband, as a wife, a whole gamut of factors. So I think the psychologist will be in a better position. But what we have gathered so far indicate that economic pressure, alcoholism, drugs, and immaturity, and hot tempers, among others, that are factors leading to increase in domestic violence. But then, let me also point it out that we are also recording higher figures because people are now willing to report cases of abuse within the domestic setting than it used to be in the past. It's no more a private matter. It's no more an issue confined to the home. It's now, there's a law now, and a lot of education has gone into it. So that awareness has been created, and a lot of people, you'll be surprised that even uncles, brothers, fathers are leading their daughters in particular to report cases of abuse to the police. People are no longer interested in shielding particularly sexual offenses. Even though in certain areas, the Chief Justice admonished some traditional rulers in recent past, people still find it economical or profitable to settle cases of sexual abuse at home instead of reporting them to the police. But at the end of the day, we are recording higher figures, maybe sometime because of the multiplicity of the media, so it looks bigger in the eye of the public. But a lot of people are also reporting cases of abuse within the domestic setting.
Before we talk about armed robberies and other issues, let's talk about crime during the Easter celebration. How was it?
Oh, well, I wouldn't say 0% crime rate. But at least we have an appreciable decrease in criminal activities. Throughout the period, we've not recorded any case of robbery. And then apart from traffic infractions, a few of them, we have to pat ourselves at the shoulder that a good job has been done, not only by the police, but by the public, because a lot of people actually stayed in line. And prior to the Easter festivity, the Accra Regional Police in particular embarked on a massive cleanup exercise, cleanup in quotes. We embark on an exercise to raid the city of Okada or unregistered motorbikers. We've arrested a lot, even yesterday, to climax the festivity. We realized that there will be increasing public activities, and that is the time that this rider take advantage and create a lot of mess, and also take advantage and also smash bags, attack people, and have a quick getaway. So we have to embark on this exercise.
Led by
the regional commander, and almost 900 motorbikes were confiscated, and we are still screening them. And God willing, in a few days' time, a lot of them will be taken to court.
We will talk more about the Okada and what you are doing with these seized motorbikes. But what about the spate of armed robberies? Is there worry? Because recently, the regional command has been picking up a lot of armed robbers all over.
Surely, everybody's worried. Even a single robbery is recorded, it's still a matter of great concern for us, because it's still a security concern. But we have to allay public fear that it's not on the ascendancy. Most criminals, particularly in Accra, are finding it uncomfortable to operate in the metropolis, so they are finding their way out. So what the strategy they've adopted now, instead of robbery, they are now breaking into homes that are empty. So that is why during the Yuletide or the Easter festivities, we came out with this public security alert that at the end of the day, when you are even going to church, the entire household shouldn't go. At least a few people should be left behind to take care of the home. Because, and aside of that, people are also daring. They break into your car. Immediately you step out, just a second, they are gone with your mobile phone, they are gone with your laptop, they are gone with your iPad, whatever that they find important to steal or valuable to steal. So we also took the opportunity to educate the public on this. It's a crime alert campaign that we did. So I think it yielded dividend. It's important that we take security tips, we take them serious, and then let's ensure that we do our best to imbibe it as part of our culture. Because we cannot at every point in time be counting on the police. Well, some criminal activities are beyond the control of the police, because the police cannot be in your home. we can only patrol around your area. If something is happening in your home, at the blind side of the police, nobody, we cannot take action.
So do those who are arrested sent to court?
Well, it's a matter of screening. If there's a case against you, we have to build a docket and send you to court. So a stage is, if we arrest 200 people, maybe somebody at GBC might have closed from work and on his way home will be added to the swoop and said, people, you have to do a thorough screening and take those people out. And the real criminal are processed for court. Then the decision is left for the court to take.
It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana, Accra. Behind the News is also live on Sunrise FM 95.7. And 96.5 in Kofodia, and Garden City 92.1 in Kumasi, and Twin City Radio 94.7 in 2nd D. And with me in the studio is the SP Freeman Tete of the Police Public Affairs Directorate. And let's now talk about the Okada and the seizure of these motorbike of the riders. Why the recent focus of the police on the Okada or motorbike riders?
We've gathered over the years that most criminals are resorting to motorbikes. It's easier, it's faster, you can easily get away from a crime scene after committing the crime and without any track or without any traces of you. So they are finding it easier and more convenient to use. And that is why in our operation, every district command in Accra in particular has been tasked to procure motorbike. So we've now added a motorbike component to our daily patrols and nightly patrols just to counteract the activities. But we have to go beyond that. Aside of people using motorbike to commit crime, it's also becoming a nuisance on our road, especially when some of our brothers are going to bury the dead. The kind of scene they create, the traffic congestion, and this kind of indiscipline from all angles. So we've taken note of all this. And it's also causing a lot of accident, creating confusion on the road, simply. So we have to map a strategy to ensure that at least the unregistered one that have outnumbered the registered one should be impounded. So that is why we spring up an unannounced and or a surprise operation to make sure that we get as many as we could. So all the seven divisions in Accra embark on a simultaneous operation, and it has actually helped. So just cast your mind back to yesterday and the previous day. Compare yesterday to the Christmas, to any of the holidays. There was a difference because we did not cite any motorbike on the road apart from the registered one and the responsible riders.
But there have been complaints that impounding these motorbikes are not well targeted. Tell us how you are going about it, because not all motor riders are Okada riders, and some I believe are genuinely registered.
Well, every operational team is supposed to read in between the line, but at the end of the day there will be genuine riders who may fall into the hand of the police. And those people, we have an arrangement for them. When you're able to produce genuine document covering your motorbike, it's a registered motorbike, you're able to produce your license, you have to take it. Said people will not be taken to court. The inconvenience is there, but at the end of the day, you will be left off the hook. But we went in, the majority that we went after are unregistered motorbike. You can see them. Most of them don't have number plates, no helmets, no protective gear, and no rider's license. Those were the people that we went in for. Went in for the bike, and then the few that we could get some substances, marijuana and co, we picked them, and they are also facing another charge. So that is what happened. There will obviously be isolated cases. There will obviously be people who will fall, unfortunately, into our hand who are registered riders and with registered motorbikes. But those ones is accepted. As somebody will say, 10% casualty rate in court is accepted. respects. Maybe we can use this medium to apologize to said people, that they should understand that it's for the betterment of society. That is why we did that. It's to fight crime. We have no any other motive than fighting criminals. So it's normal. We are not justifying it, but sometimes everybody in this country will understand that you can easily, even policemen, some of them were victims. So we just take it like that.
So how many motorbikes have you seized?
I think 875 for just yesterday. And last Thursday we had almost the same number. So we are in almost getting closer to 2,000.
And where are you keeping all of them?
The Vero police station. We are there, well guided or well protected.
But are you not making some people jobless by your...
Surely action? We are enforcing the law. It's a law that must work. We don't make the law. We have a clear mandate in the Constitution. Article 200 of the Constitution mandate the police to enforce law and order to protect life and property. That is exactly what we are doing. So we are not interested in as to whether we are making somebody jobless. Commercialization of motorbike is illegal. Okada is illegal in this country. So what is the mandate of the police? To make sure that lawbreakers do not have room to operate. To bring lawbreakers to book.
So with all these motorbikes, are they unregistered?
Yes, either unregistered or the rider is not a registered or a licensed rider. But I can tell you on authority, factually, that most of them, about 90%, are unregistered motorbikes.
And those with the fake documents, what happens to the owners who have fake documents?
We did not target owners. But at the end of the day, if we are lucky and we get you who is on the police wanted list, so be it. As a friend will say, holala. But we went in for motorbikes. But you know, we are also after criminals. We have some criminals on our wanted list. So if per chance, God being so good, and we get you, then it's a double do for us. We'll be very grateful.
It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Akra, let's read some of your text messages. And Amos Nandi says, in fact, I love Behind the News. And David from Kati says, very soon workers of Ghana will be suffering from financial coma because of taxes. Mario Sefiri also says, good job done Behind the News crew, but please let some of the bad nuts in the police service know that without the media the nation cannot stand, so they should partner the media for social cohesion. Monica Coins in Navrongo says, what is it again about a jet in Iran? I think Ibrahim should focus on his business. Idrisu A.B. Fusain in Tamale says, if the explanation from the Finance Committee in Parliament is right, then they should come out with a clear guideline to make sure that charges from the banks are safe and are legitimate. And this one says, no, let's change the discourse a bit. What is the state of affairs when it comes to the issue of land guards, particularly in Accra? The police, we know, have been on their tails. Are you winning the fight against them?
Well, I wouldn't be in a position. I just don't want to say we are winning the fight. We are fighting them. We want to neutralize the activity because it's gangsterism. Because most of these guys are weapon wielders. They have all manner of weapons. So it's not an issue of longer. It's an issue of people taking, arrogating themselves with the power to harass others, to make life uncomfortable to genuine landowners. So those are the people we are waging war on. They have no right. They have no authority to arrogate themselves with those powers. So we always ask for public support. We always ask for public assistance to enable us to neutralize the activities. They have no space and no room in this country. So we often ask for public support. There are some big hands who are encouraging those people, and we go in after them when we get them. that land gas is becoming a problem. So we want the various communities to cooperate with the police so that they can, because they live among them, they know them. So we want those people to, at every point in time, give us a tip-off so that we can get after them.
Well, before you take leave of us, when we talk about crime and criminals, what message do you have for criminals listening to you and those intending to commit crime?
Ghana is not a pleasant place for crime. The police, as expected, have a core mandate to fight them. So what you realize is that some parents, for obvious reasons, justify the activities of their criminal children. Some of them even boldly say that the police have gone in and either shoot or arrested innocent people, when intelligence on the ground indicate that truly these people are criminal. So all of us must be truthful to ourselves and assist the police to arrest these criminals and make the country safer for us, rather than peddling on truth and criticizing the police. When we go wrong, we must admit that we've gone wrong, and the bad nut among us will be punished. But we should not be talking about the police going after the wrong people, because it does not augur well for the security of this country. Because at the end of the day, more room will be open up for criminals to take control of this country. But for us, we'll continue to do our work professionally. When we fall short, we admit that we've fallen short. And when the personnel falls short or is off the line, the appropriate sanctions are there. But what we need is public cooperation. We want to make the city of Accra, in particular, in the entire country, uncomfortable for criminals to operate.
And briefly, how should the public support you in fighting crime?
By way of tip-off, 18555 for MTN and Vodafone, and the 191 for all network. Beside that, you can go to any district commander and serve as an informant, pass on information secretly. We have a code that guides all of us. We have a code of conduct. We have a regulation that guides us to protect our informant. And when you're an informant, you don't let the next person know you are an informant to the police. It's not a profession. It's not a vocation. It's just a way of passing on information to the police. At the time you are passing on that information to the police, you're an informant to the police. It's not a permanent thing. So when the public, everybody can be an informant to the police. And if you're not too sure of a policeman, the district commanders are there. They are senior police officers. The inspectors are there. They have a job to keep secret and work on it. Aside of this, constantly get in touch, assist the police with resources, those who can do it. Join or form a neighborhood watch in your area. It's important so that together you can collaborate with the police to fight crime.
Well, we want to thank you, DSC Freeman Tete, for your time with us tonight in the studio. DSC Freeman Tete is the Police Public Affairs Directorate. This is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Phyllis Kofi Bright Agama, John Pobi, Celestine Azee, and Edmond Tete were my producers. George Kwaku controlled the sounds, and Rosemary Gazy read the summary. My name is Agatha Samoa, and you have a lovely night.